Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive. It is a big football week around here to get back to the promised land of 500. John Harbaugh hadn't had to worry about that too much. Of course, they haven't. It started 1-5 all week long. You will hear some remnants and some residue, certainly some great baseball conversation, some AI talk, some Little League talk. We did a whole bunch of stuff from Coco's last week, Coco's Pub, and of course, our friends at Pizza John's. All of it on the Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery. Had some winning scratch-offs at Coco's. That was a lot of fun as well. And of course, the fun part of the Ravens is when they're 1-5, you say, well, they can win some games. They can get better. They can get Lamar back. Three in a row and off to Cleveland this week for a late afternoon game in the 4:30 window in Cleveland, Ohio. Scott Petrak has been a defending champion around here many times, even though I've mispronounced his name. I think the last time I had him on, I'm never going to do that again, even though I think of the late, great Rich Petro. He has covered sports for many, many years at the Chronicle, Illyria, Chronicle, Telegram, Medina, something. I mix them all up all the time. How are you, Scott? I mean, and more than that, this the covering the Browns. I did the Orioles for 30 years. Somebody said to me last week, "You root against the teams around here. You hate the teams." I'm like, when the teams lose, it's like no fun. You were having so much more fun when Joe Flacco was your quarterback, man.
Oh, it's not even close. Yeah, I don't think anybody. I mean, you're not supposed to root one way or the other. But I'll tell you what, my job is easier when they win. I know that. The locker room's easier. The coaches are easier to deal with. And January doesn't become all about new coach, new GM. It's just easier. So, yeah, this is tough times. And who knows? We got a long way to go, but it could be another long January.
You and I've had a lot of long chats. Like if somebody would have called me every year to want to talk Orioles 3 times a year from, let's say, Tampa the last 20 years, how much that would suck. And I call you guys twice a year sometimes. And we're going to talk Class A. And obviously, we hired the manager from Cleveland. So there's a very vibrant baseball thing. There's been a parade for LeBron. Don't tell anybody, but you guys had a pretty good time. But the Browns thing is still number one. I come off the boat when we didn't have a team and you did, and Modell brought it here. Like, I've been at this the whole time. I've watched it all. I've seen all the names of the quarterbacks change and all of that. I mean, I feel for the franchise. Jimmy Schwartz is one of my dearest friends, like in the football sports space through all of my life. And I sense the last couple of years when I talk to all of you out there that you wouldn't look at it and say in November, we're going to stink again. Then maybe this year, maybe since the signing of Deshaun Watson, which feels a little bit like Adam and Eve in the garden, like the original sin of the whole thing. Where is the thing right now? The Shador said it just feels like controversies that are brought on. And I see Stefanski, much as I saw, I don't know, any of three or four other coaches as being capable there over the years.
Yeah, I feel like Kevin Stefanski is more capable than many of his predecessors, especially Hugh Jackson and Freddie Kitchens and probably Rob Chudzinski. I thought Eric Mangini had a chance, but he tried to do too much. So I don't even know if I'd put him in that category. I think it's
I'm a Patton
Stefanski.
guy. I grew up with
Well, I was
Patton.
just going to say Pettine. It's Stefanski and Pettine, two guys that I think are really smart that Pettine did not get a chance. Stefanski's had 6 years, but he was two-time coach of the year. He went to
Well,
the playoffs
Patton,
four.
they gave him Johnny Football. I
Exactly.
mean,
It never
they've
would have.
done embarrassing ownership things that have completely forget the fact that he almost went to prison, right? I mean, it has like forget that. Just the football things that they've done there continue to put me and you together and have to talk about what are they doing? And I look at it from the outside and I'm like, it's the owner, isn't it, really?
Yeah, I mean, I think it certainly starts there. He's learned some things. He's given Andrew Berry, the GM, and Kevin Stefanski time. It's this year six. We'll see if they get a
I'm
year
dealing with
seven.
Sashi Brown here, so insert your own joke, dude,
Yeah, right. But yeah, it starts at ownership, and they were not good when they got here, and it took a while, and they're a little better, but are they still good enough? I would argue no, right? It starts at the top. What I think is might be most sad is they went to the playoffs twice in the previous 5 years, right? 2020 and 2023. They went to the playoffs. They won a playoff game in 2020. Nobody remembers that because the foundation or the most of the memories are terrible since the team came back in 99. So as soon as things go badly, it's always been this bad. And it was only 2 years ago when Joe Flacco led him to playoffs. No one remembers that. I'm on my text, on the X, nobody remembers that they were in the playoffs a year and a half ago, or almost 2 years ago, because the overwhelming experience since 99 has been terrible. And I think that's really sad, because that's where the entire fan base is rooted in negativity and just losing.
We gave the owner here $600 million and fixed up the stadium. And Sashi Brown, who I had to pay $100 to go to an event a week and a half ago to hear him speak and to share the same oxygen, and talking about, we listened to our fans. All they want was premium. Yeah, sure, right. That's exactly what your fans wanted. It's just such a liar's game from the ownership side of here. We've just gifted them that. In Cleveland, the reason we stole your team is you couldn't figure out your stadium situation in the state and money. And then the stadium's there, but it's not good enough and it's pinched in and it's not premium enough. And at this point, this guy almost went to jail who signed Deshaun Watson, who hasn't won anything, who's a laughing stock, is trying to now get this stadium built next to the airport out at Brook Park. And there's all of these factions of Ohio, Cleveland, the Modell Law, money, the league itself wondering where they want to put the basis of the Browns franchise in the middle of nowhere to try to monetize it better. And much like the Orioles here, they think there's an unlimited amount of money. They have a bunch of out-of-towners here. And I'm like, where do you think this money or enthusiasm's coming from when we're going to win? Okay. And even when you win, you're going to charge me premium pricing. Like at this time in Cleveland, with all of the bad juju and mojo, the fact that they're in the stadium building business, and nobody in Baltimore would know that. The Baltimore, we think you're in the crappy football business. But the most important thing that's going on in your isn't whether Shedeur Sanders is going to play or whether Stefanski is going to coach or who Schwartz is going to be running around with defense next year or Myles Garrett, where they're getting money. The big story in your community is that stadium and the real future of the entire thing for your grandchildren. And they haven't managed that well either, right?
Well, I don't know. They're getting what they want. I don't know if I don't think it's the right thing. I think the team should have stayed in Cleveland. I'm not a big proponent of, $1 billion of taxpayer money going to build a stadium or renovate a stadium, whatever it's going to be. I think it's going to be a disservice to downtown moving to Brook Park. And, I get it's only 12 miles away or 8 miles, whatever it is. But I still think downtown's going to suffer, and downtown suffered enough. Now, the Haslams obviously argue that, but it feels like it's full steam ahead. They
Well, they don't
got
care about
fined.
Cleveland, right? They have
Huh?
no—they don't care about Cleveland. What do they care about Cleveland?
I mean, right. I mean, the re they want to keep up with the Joneses, right? So they want their giant new stadium. They want parking revenue, which they don't have at the stadium, at the current stadium. So that's a huge reason they're moving to Brook Park. They're going to build a, a retail and entertainment district around the new dome by the airport. And they got Cleveland, they finally got Cleveland mayor to sign off on it by agreeing to give him, I think it's $100 million over, for different things, to renovate the lakefront, to tear down where the current stadium is. And it was contentious. I just didn't like how the whole thing came down. They got $600 million from the state.
It's over, right? Like
Pretty
we're
much, I
not
mean,
debating it anymore, right?
no, I mean, it's pretty much a foregone conclusion. There needs to be, I think city council needs to sign off on it. But they're moving ahead. They've already kind of started the, not construction, but the moving the ground and that kind of thing.
Every time
So,
I fly over SoFi Stadium and I saw it on TV, I took my wife out to see it last month
that's nice.
because we were out there. And I remember when Stan Kroenke was going to keep the Rams and give them a fair chance. I had Jeff Gordon on from St. Louis, my life for last week. It really is all these years in. I would have been the guy in 1995 here begging to steal your football team, which we did, saying, let's build a stadium. Let's give this money to Modell. He won't be a creep. And he really wasn't. I mean, he and David were wonderful here, good citizens to their deaths. And they've given it to this guy who now hasn't had a press conference in 10 years, walks away from Justin Tucker, took $600 million and hasn't even said thank you to the fans here, threw the media up into a little Kevin Byrne press box up in the corner, banning people like me and selling premium this and all of that. And we just have A different sleazy billionaire owner here just happens to be from here, doesn't even vote here anymore. Like, not even he's a Floridian at this point, because aren't they all? And like, I look at it all, and I just in Cleveland to have it fester up with all the bad mojo. Like, if the Orioles had to get a stadium built right now on inertia and future earnings and all of that, wouldn't go so well because their brand's so beaten up. And all that being said, how are the Browns on the field? Is there any chance they can cover 9.5 here, Scott? Louis, the bookmaker, wants to know.
Yeah, I mean, they lost to the Jets yesterday, right? So it's hard to have any optimism after that, or the last weekend they lost, lose to the Jets 27-20. So it's hard to drum up any reason to think that they could beat the Ravens or even hang with the Ravens. My only counter would be they were bad last year and they beat the Ravens, right? So I think that's I wouldn't rule out anything inside the division. I think crazy stuff happens inside the division. I know the Ravens are on a bit of a heater. Are they due for a little misstep? Who knows? I think the Browns have a pretty good game plan against Lamar. Myles Garrett's great. I just don't know how the Browns can score enough, right? They scored 20 against the Jets, and that feels like an eruption of points, and it's 20. And even if they play well against the Ravens, I don't know if they can keep, Lamar under 20. So, can it be close? Sure. Would I pick him to win? No way.
Scott Petrak has been our friend, the defending champion, and all conversationalist of all things Northern Ohio, because Drew Carey's unavailable and he knows more about the Cleveland teams anyway. He is at the Elyria Chronicle Telegram as well. You can find him out on the internet, Petrak. Good man and a great insider to all this. And listen, this is where the point where I don't want to get you mad at me, but Shedeur Sanders, I know you don't want to talk about it because everybody wants to talk about it. And like, what does Stefanski and what do the brighter minds there make, and what could you tell me and enlighten me over the last 7 months about the quarterback position as we are preparing to play a very capable looking Joe Flacco on Thanksgiving night here? I mean, I hope his arm's okay and bye week treats him well. I know you've watched Flacco run around that campus twice after having people like me tell you after a decade and a half here saying, that's a grown ass man there. That's a different kind of cat. And watching all of this mess with all of the quarterback thing there from Watson to bringing Sanders, I mean, it's sort of a self-inflicted circus to some degree. I'm just shocked that Stefanski and whoever is signed up behind closed doors to be a part of this, that they can't find some level of stability there to at least make the beat writer's job more easy.
Right, that's all I care about. I mean, that's what they were going for with Watson, and obviously I thought it was an ill-advised move for all the off-field reasons. I understood why they did it on the field. It was Deshaun Watson, Pro Bowler, top. I thought he was a top five quarterback the last time he played with Houston, whatever year that was, 2020. He's not been the same guy. Whether it's he's been hurt a lot, but even when he's been healthy, hasn't been the same guy. My conjecture would be mentally. All that stuff, and I hate to say all the stuff he dealt with because I think he brought it upon himself, but all the off-field stuff I think affected him. You have people calling you terrible names, people hating you. I just think it affected him on the field, and he hasn't been the same guy. I don't think, who knows? I'm not ruling out him ever playing here again, but I don't think he takes another snap for this team. So that has set them back unbelievably. You call it original sin. That's a great way to put it. So they're trying to recover from that. But, I think you could say they butchered this year. They traded for Kenny Pickett, then they trade him. Just he has a hamstring in training camp, probably keeps him out of the starting job. Then they trade him before the season starts. Joe Flacco has trouble with turnovers. They weren't all his fault. They trade him, or they bench him and then trade him after four games. And he's a better player than Dillon Gabriel. Right now, he's just a better player. And I get the other aspects. You want to see your rookie quarterbacks play, but Joe Flacco would give this team a chance to win games that Dillon Gabriel does not. And then you get two rookies and you play the one. I think they want to get as long a look at Gabriel until they turn it over to Shedeur Sanders. I don't know how many more weeks it is. It's going to be through Baltimore at least. I don't know if there's a lot of shelf life beyond that. And then Sanders is a big mystery. He played two games in the preseason. One, he looked great. The other one, he looked like he didn't belong. He had a huge transition coming from Colorado where they didn't huddle, they didn't call plays. The Browns didn't think he was ready when the year started. I'm not sure they think he's ready now. He says he is. I'm not sure they agree. I just think when you're 2-7, and whatever they're going to be when they put him in the game to start. You just have to, because they're going to have top picks next year, a top pick. They're going to have two first round picks. They're probably going to go after a quarterback. You want to at least see what Sanders looks like.
Why did they sign up for that? You know, after 2.5 days of he's being discriminated against, his father, you know, poorly, you know, overrated, not the guy we like, didn't interview well, all the nasty stuff you could say about a kid that dropped from the first round in his mind to the fifth round in real terms, to then bring him in and know that the old man's larger than life. Now he's not going to a bowl game. Just, I mean, look, man, I had Dion here for 2 years, and I covered Dion as a baseball player with the Braves and the Reds back in the day. You know what you're getting, and if the kid wasn't going to get on the field till now anyway, do they really believe he can play, Scott, at all?
I think they do. I don't know if they believe he can play right now. I certainly think he's more talented than Dylan Gabriel. They thought he would be. I think they thought he'd be a second round pick. Not that they would take him in the second round, but somebody would. So the fact that he's still there in the fifth round, I think they saw his value. I don't think you can discount the publicity factor, right? That he brings buzz, and someone in that organization craves that, right? You're in the headlines all the time. It's national conversation. So I think those are factors, and I think you can make a legitimate argument that getting a quarterback that you believe have upside has upside in the fifth round is worth it. But that discounts all the quote unquote baggage that comes with it. Now he's been fine. He's given a couple of weird interviews where he said he's better than starters in the league. Then, you know, Rex Ryan tells him to shut up. So the next week he mimes an interview, which is weird. You know, like there's been a couple of those. But I think he's a good kid to be around. He smiles all the time. He's entertaining.
His
But
father wasn't a bad guy as a player. I mean,
no.
this larger than life
The big
persona,
shadow, right.
that's not what that everybody that ever played with Dion, loved
Right.
Dion, baseball and football across,
Right.
yeah.
But they probably did underestimate the, just for lack of a better word, distraction that would come with it, right? If it was another fifth round quarterback on the bench, Kevin Stefanski would not be getting asked every week, when should
Also,
this
if you
kid,
were
right?
7-4 and not slappy like Cleveland's been forever, right?
Sure. Right. I mean, that's the other part of it. And when you don't know who your quarterback's going to be next year, then everything's on the table. And it's, why aren't we seeing this guy? Why isn't he on the field? Plus, he's crazy popular. So it has generated its own little, whatever, you know, news cycles. But it has nothing to do with the reason they're 2-7, you know? And I'll tell you what, he's really accurate. I think he can play. I do. Like, he's not a great athlete, and I kind of worry about his athleticism. Can he hang in the pocket and just throw, win from the pocket over and over again? But he's really good throwing the ball. I think he throws it better than Dylan Gabriel. It's just a matter if he's ready for everything that the NFL job entails. And we're going to have to see, because the last time we saw him on the field was against the Rams in the preseason. And he kept taking sacks, you know, 20-yard sacks, because he kept drifting and he wasn't good, quick enough to get out of the pressure. And you just can't do that and live in this league.
Scott Petrak has covered Cleveland sports for going on 3 decades, I think, and he's always making time for us here. Last thing on the Sanders thing for me, and I'm going to write the next chapter for you. He's going to play next week, week after that. He's going to be playing for a slappy 2-10 team, but with no weapons, with an offensive line that couldn't protect any of the rest of the guy. Like, all of that's going to come back out, and you're going to say, well, how do you expect him to have any success, right? So it's like putting the starting quarterback out with the third string at the end of a preseason game, which don't exist anymore, to say, you can't expect to have success in that circumstance. So that's, I'm not speaking Dion's words, but that's unfair to my child.
Right. No, I mean, you're exactly right. Like, Dylan Gabriel's in the same circumstances, right? And his receivers are not good. Jerry Jeudy finally had a game against the Jets last week. The rest of the receiving corps hasn't done much. The offensive line has not been good. That's not getting better with Shedeur Sanders. So, right, he's entering a tough spot. And the only example you need is, or the only proof you need, is Joe Flacco was not good here for 4 games, goes to Cincinnati and lights it up. And the reason is the receivers are better. Like, that's the difference. Cincinnati's line isn't any better than Cleveland's. And I don't think the play caller is any better. The difference is he's got guys he can throw the ball to, and the Browns don't, whether it's Flacco, Gabriel, or Sanders.
And then once you got the guys to throw the ball to, you got to have somebody throwing the ball. Last thing for you, because you are in Cleveland, we just hired a manager. Obviously, you got the whole gambling thing going on there with Class A. We had the thing here with Harbaugh a week and a half ago. 5 points. I mean, the FBI calls when you move a line 5 points on a Saturday before the old FBI does. The new FBI just goes to the NBA and just decide to lock them up. And but the Class A thing. I'm not putting that on Patel or the criminal run in the country. I like that thing was kind of in the works, and this text threads, and I threw a ball, but he swung it. I mean, it's inconceivable, but this isn't the only guy doing it in sports. But I'm thinking in your town, this smells even worse than Justin Tucker and Ray Rice smelled here to some degree.
Yeah, it's interesting. If it were a Browns player, the world would explode, right? Because the Browns get so much coverage. It's a big deal with the Guardians, but the Guardians overcame it. Like, he's their best pitcher, right? Class A was unhittable in 2024. He was really good this year, and then he gets suspended, and they still go to the playoffs, right? And surprise people. So it's a huge story. I don't know if it's as huge a story as it would be if it was on a different team. It just has a different vibe when it's the Guardians. But it has me thinking, the obvious question is, why would these guys do it? Because it's Class A and Ortiz. Why do it? If you have all the money in the world, why? What's the motivation? Or do you have gambling? It's the same with the NBA, right? Do you have earlier gambling debts where now you're beholden to people, or is it just greed? Who knows? It's mind-boggling. And then you question, should the Guardians have figured this out when they made the move for Class A? Obviously, talent-wise, it was a great trade. But when he got here, he got suspended for PEDs. So was there something that they should have recognized before they made the move? Something they ignored or chose to, hey, we'll figure, he'll be better when he's here. And let's assume, I hate to do it, but if he's guilty and he never pitches again, it's obviously it's a huge stain on this organization.
Well, and I think I talked about Pete Rose. I had Munch on earlier from your town. Just talking about Pete Rose out in Ohio and all of these years, and he dies in dignity, and they're doing bet commercials every single night, and knowing that this is th that this not potentially going to be a problem. What they're going to do about it when it's a problem. Same thing with the gamesmanship that Harbaugh showed 2 weeks ago to have everybody in the organization lying to everybody about Lamar Jackson really practice. He put shoulder pads on. Like, I the gamesmanship, the business being in on it, the ownership part of it, the push for it, all of that's bad enough. But the fact that players are going to be enticed into participating and you know it and you can't control it and you're going to find out when it's too late, it really is going to mess with the sanctity of where we go back to Shoeless Joe, which is and I hold lottery tickets up, whether it's on the up and up. When you buy a lottery ticket, it's not fixed. That's the whole gig, right? That's on the up and up. That's why none of this is on the, they couldn't even get the coin flip right in Berlin to figure out who got the ball. Like, and we're settling bets with referees, with humans. This is not pulling a lever. It's different than other games of chance. And I'm gravely concerned about the whole the avalanche that happens after this sort of thing happens.
Yeah, I have 2 points on it. The whole Harbaugh injury report thing, right? And you see it with coaches are so paranoid. And I think coaches, and Harbaugh is a perfect example with that situation, they have to be more aware of the gambling aspect of it. I'm sure Harbaugh is trying to keep, I can't remember, whatever team they were playing that week
The
in
Bears.
the Bears, right? He's worried about that. He's not worried about the line. He's worried about the Bears, but somebody has to be above him going, hey, it's not about the Bears. It's about on the up and up, it's about gambling. Coaches need to be more aware of that, I think, across the league. And hopefully the Harbaugh thing showed it. The other thing is gambling's always been an issue, and it's always opened the door to point shaving and scandals. We've had them even when gambling was illegal. What changed, and I was at Northwestern when we had a point shaving scandal on the basketball team. What changed is the prop bets. And where a guy can say, hey, I'm not affecting my team's outcome if I throw a ball on the first pitch of an at bat, but I can still make me or my buddies money. And I think that's the door that was opened that has really left the sport vulnerable, because people think, I think they can do it without affecting wins and losses, but yet it's still a criminal activity, and it just opens the door for all kinds of nefarious activity.
That's like Pete Rose saying, I bet on my team, right?
Right, it's similar, but you can rationalize that easy, right? I'm going to throw ball one. It doesn't matter, right? You can rationalize that, and I could see a person saying, "Hey, that's not a big deal," as opposed to throwing a game. And that's where the prop bets make this possible. And we didn't have that 5, 10 years ago. Prop bets weren't here. Prop bets came with the legalized gambling everywhere.
Well, look here. Everybody in Baltimore has no respect for your football team, but we all respect the Guardians and Stephen Vogt coming in here for that press conference with Albernez this week. So I hope that thing works out well. Scott, I appreciate you. I know your time's short. Always great having you on from Cleveland, Ohio, man. Appreciate it.
Hey, take care, bud.
Scott Petrak here from the Chronicle Telegram in Elyria. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. Back for more on Baltimore Positive. It's Browns Week.